I'm going to begin my sermon today with a comment on a small and probably not very important story that was in the news last week. It's a story that, despite its lack of real significance, caught my attention and held my attention for more time than is probably appropriate. In fact, I'm only commenting on it really because I had to comment on it. I had to comment on it in order to get it out of my brain so I could write the rest of the sermon. So, this is a story that involves a controversial and polarizing person in American politics. And I like to preach political sermons, as you know, but I'm using this illustration. Well, it's meant to be more of a spiritual illustration than it is a political illustration. That's my hope anyway. So, with all those disclaimers out of the way, here we go. This story that I want to tell you is the story of a $40 million yacht belonging to the DeVos family. Betsy DeVos, you may know, is the current Secretary of Education, and Ms. DeVos comes from a family that got rich selling automobiles, and her husband, Dick, is the son of one of the guys who founded Amway. Anyway, and Betsy's DeVos's brother, Eric, used his inheritance to start a private mercenary company called Blackwater, which has committed war crimes in Iraq. But that's another sermon, a more political sermon for later. What I'm trying to get at is that Betsy DeVos and her husband and their family are incredibly wealthy people. They are the 1% of the 1%. The Trump cabinet is comprised of the wealthiest individuals ever to have served in the cabinet of an American president, and Betsy DeVos is the wealthiest member of Trump's cabinet. So, the DeVos family has this insanely fancy yacht. They actually have a fleet of 10 yachts, but this is the biggest and fanciest. It's something like 160 feet long, and it requires a crew of 12 people to operate. The yacht is probably more like a ship. It's that big, and the yacht was in the news this week, as you probably know, because when the yacht was tied to a dock in Ohio last week, some clown decided to protest Betsy DeVos and the Trump administration by untying the yacht in the middle of the night, apparently hoping that the boat would kind of float aimlessly out onto Lake Erie and someone might have to go out in a canoe to rescue it or something. I don't know. Instead, it just bumped up against the dock and there was $5,000 or $10,000 worth of damage done to the paint job. But while the media were going on and on about the paint job, I couldn't help noticing that the ship itself was flying a foreign flag from the stern, meaning that the yacht is registered outside of the United States, the Cayman Islands, it turns out. Now, I don't know why the DeVos family registered their yacht in the Cayman Islands, but there are a couple of reasons why people generally register ships offshore. One is to avoid paying taxes that, among other things, pay for the Coast Guard, which keeps the waterways safe for the DeVos family yacht. Again, that's another sermon. But another reason to register the yacht overseas is to avoid paying the crew a minimum wage or providing benefits and health insurance and workers' compensation. You'd have to pay those on a U.S. flagship. Again, probably another sermon. Either way, though, I'm willing to guess that the decision to register the ship in the Cayman Islands, on some level, that decision came down to a sense of scarcity. On some level. Despite being among the wealthiest people in the world, the DeVos family felt they had to save money. They didn't have enough money to register their ship in the United States. So by flying a foreign flag over the stern of their yacht, they were doing what they felt they had to do to save money. Now, this really isn't a political issue. It's a political issue, but it doesn't. I'm trying to let it not be a political issue. I think that in many ways, this is truly a spiritual issue. I've told you about the DeVos family yacht because I want to contrast the DeVos sense of scarcity and parsimony with Jesus' sense of abundance and generosity as described in this morning's lesson from the Gospel of John. Today's lesson from John is one of several similar stories found in the Gospels. In fact, the story of Jesus feeding a multitude with only a few loaves and a couple of fishes is one of a very few number of stories that actually are recorded in all four of the Gospels, which means that this story was an important story to early Christians, the folks who who wrote and preserved and curated and edited the Gospels. This was one of the most important stories for them. Otherwise, it wouldn't be recorded in all four of the Gospels. Now, exactly why this story was so important and what message the early Christians derived from it, that's up to debate. Some readers of the Bible see this story as a miracle that proves Jesus claimed to be divine. After all, only a God could so manipulate the physical world as to multiply loaves and fishes. Other readers of the Gospel see this message as a message about how the church should behave. The miracle, according to this way of thinking, did not happen when Jesus worked a magic trick on someone's lunch. Rather, the true miracle happened with one person, when one person shared his food, and that inspired others to share in a like manner, and before long everybody was eating. Now, I tend to agree with the latter interpretation, but either way, the story happened, the miracle occurred, because Jesus believed in abundance, and Jesus believed in generosity. Jesus was willing to trust that there was enough to go around. And he believed that that abundance would be sufficient so long as there was generosity in the crowd. And even if it was a magic-like miracle that involved the supernatural expansion of bread and fish, still the whole crowd would not have eaten without the ability to trust the abundance and to practice generosity. Even if the most literal and traditional understanding of the miracle is true, it only works because everybody believed there was enough to go around, and everyone shared what was passed on to them. The importance of this story to the early church suggests that when we read this or other accounts of Jesus feeding great multitudes with little money, with little in the way of food, we should take a few minutes to think about whether or not we are seeing the abundance of the world around us, and about whether or not we are being generous and sharing that abundance, passing it on. Now, I suppose I'm not alone when I admit to you that money is the first thing that comes to mind when I think about abundance and generosity. And it's always touchy when a pastor starts talking about money and generosity from the pulpit, because there are preachers out there whose main occupation is fleecing the flock, usually talking about the importance of generosity as it applies to money being given to them. Such pastors are rare, but they are famous. So let me say that the session right now, that's our board of directors right now, is in the process of setting our budget, and we're a little short, and anything you can do to help us meet the financial needs over the next year is much appreciated, and we'll be talking about that more in months to come. I hope you will support the church as you are able. I do believe this passage calls folks with financial means to be generous with that abundance, but I know that not everyone enjoys financial abundance. I mean, I'm raising three teenagers in the Bay Area on the combined income of a pastor and a music teacher. And I know things are probably easier for me than they are for most of Oakland's residents. So I know that the balance in a bank account is not always an indicator of abundance. But I also know that there's more to abundance than money. The fact that some people may not have a lot of money does not leave the economically disadvantaged out of this story, because money is only one kind of abundance. The fact that abundance and generosity can be matters of the spirit and not just of finances or of material wealth, this was probably first brought home to me back in the days when I was in college, and I still believed that only Christians probably would end up in heaven, right? And a wise woman, she was the director of Westminster Woods, the summer camp where I was working on staff, Noreen Nazarian was her name, and we were talking about this, and she asked me if I'd be upset if I got to heaven and found a Buddhist there with me. That was an important question, because I knew that if I said yes, then I was an absolute jerk. But in order not to be a jerk, I was going to have to change my way of thinking. I'd have to embrace a greater appreciation for the abundance of God's love and of God's grace, and I'd have to adopt a more generous outlook in my spiritual life, which I've tried to do, and thank God for the words of Noreen Nazarian. Her wisdom changed my life, and it's important that we are generous with the abundance of such wisdom that surrounds us. The honest truth is that the world is full of all kinds of abundance, and some of that abundance is financial and material, Some of it's spiritual and emotional. Some of it has to do with things like hospitality and time and skill. Some of it has to do with the fullness of the earth and the land and the sea and the air. And the Christian faith asks that we recognize the abundance that is all around us, and that we be generous with passing that abundance around, passing it on to others. That means we should be generous with our finances. It means we should be prepared to set an extra plate at the table in case a friend is lonely and needs company. Recognizing the abundance of the universe and sharing it means that we should never consider ourselves so consumed with work or with whatever else occupies us that we cannot listen to the stories a child has to share after she has found a salamander near a creek in a grove of ancient redwoods. Recognizing the abundance of creation and sharing that abundance means allowing ourselves to be overwhelmed with beauty and transformed by beauty so that we are doing beautiful things in the world as artists and as workers of every kind. Acknowledging abundance and passing it along means being filled with love and letting love set the agenda for our lives and our decisions. Seeing the abundance of the universe means recognizing the grace of God that infuses creations, every cranny and nook, and then sharing that abundance of grace by living a life of compassion and forgiveness for others. Finding and sharing the divine abundance of the world means rejecting the notion that there's not enough money, rejecting the notion that there's enough money to build bombs but not enough money to provide universal health care. After all, if we can defend people with violence, we ought to be able to care for people with good medicine. An embrace of abundance and generosity means saying no to the idea that immigrant children must be separated from their parents and incarcerated in order to defend a country as wealthy and as powerful as our own. To see the world as a place of great abundance and to share that abundance means to reject the idea that the ongoing subjugation and disempowerment of brown and black Americans is an economic necessity. It is to refuse the logic that says investing in industry is good, but investing in people is a waste of money. Or that prisons are necessary, but excellent schools are optional. That's not seeing the world's abundance, and it certainly is not sharing that abundance like so many loaves and fishes. Living in a world of abundance and being generous with that abundance means refusing to accept the idea that nothing can be done about homelessness. It means believing children in the inner city and in poor rural communities are just as capable of learning as their suburban counterparts, and that their schools are just as deserving of public funds. The invitation that comes to us from John's gospel this morning is that we recognize the abundance that infuses all of creation, and having benefited from that abundance, we must pass it along. If you have loaves and fishes to bring to the picnic, bring them and share them. If you don't have food, take what is offered to you and pass along what you do not eat. And that could be financial, it could be emotional, it could be spiritual abundance, it could be an abundance of time or of hospitality, or it could involve recognizing and pointing out the beauty of an ancient California live oak. And maybe, indeed, probably, certainly, it's a combination of recognizing and sharing all kinds of abundance. Whatever it is, dearly beloved, open your eyes to the richness and the fullness of the universe that God has created. Partake of the abundance that is offered to you and pass it on. And when you do, you will surely find yourself at home in the kingdom of God. Amen.